Welcome to the 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. As we go to air Wednesday morning, Illinois health officials are reporting more than 1,100 newly confirmed cases of COVID-19. And since March, officials say 4,923 people have died from the disease here. In America, the response to the global pandemic has been left largely up to individual state governments. In Illinois, as more and more people seem to be getting antsy about being ordered to stay home most of the time, the state is set to ease some restrictions later this week. Meanwhile, Illinois is struggling to find the money to pay for its ongoing operations. The budget the legislature adopted last weekend counts on a massive cash handout from the federal government. To find out about the prospects for that and more, I spoke yesterday afternoon with Democratic Illinois U.S. Senator Tammy Duckworth. Senator Duckworth, welcome to the 21st.
It's good to be on. Thank you.
So it seems like a lot of people in Illinois now are feeling like they are over the pandemic, right? Quarantine fatigue, I've heard it referred to as. And we see reports of Illinois license plates packing the parking lots of businesses in Missouri and Wisconsin and Indiana. Do you get that sense from people that they are just ready to move on with this? And if so, what should the government be doing to address that?
Well, I sympathize with folks feeling very claustrophobic and that they are ready to be over with this. But my first message is we must stay safe. I mean, I have in my household a 2-year-old, a 5-year-old, and my 79-year-old mom. You know, they're over it as well. My 2 and 5 year old, or my 5-year old just yesterday said, "Mommy, I miss my friends. Can I have a play date?" And I had to tell her no. But it's all about our health and safety. And we don't want to have a rebound and be forced to, instead of having an orderly emergence from our shelter in place, to rush so far in front of the testing and the capability to handle this pandemic and be forced to go back to the very restrictive shelter in place. So what I say to folks is please, be patient. And the best way that we're going to be able to emerge out of this in an orderly manner is exactly the way the governor has been talking about it, right? And this phase plan. And because we don't want to have to go backwards, that's going to be even more painful for the economy and for everyone.
And so you support the phase plan, it sounds like, because I've heard public health experts who say, you know, maybe we need to figure out a way to, instead of asking people sort of like abstinence only education in the realm of, you know, what we teach students about, you know, safe sex and things like that. Maybe we need something like that for COVID, which is like, well, here's how you can live with it, as opposed to you just have to stay home and stay away from people and that sort of thing.
Well, that's what the phase plan is, though, right? The phase plan is a way for us to slowly move forward in a way to cope with the COVID pandemic. And it's also tied to the ability for us to ramp up testing. One of the things we've been able to do, one of those benchmarks is 10,000 tests per day. We're now upwards of 18,000 per day. That's critical. We can't open the economy the way we want to unless we have widespread, low-cost testing. And so I do think that the phase plan is a way for us to move forward in a way that our healthcare system can keep up with providing the testing and also the treatment for folks who will come down with this illness. So I would have to say that, I don't think comparing the phase opening, gradual opening to complete abstinence is an accurate comparison. I think it's actually the very responsible way to move forward so that we can start to do things, but just in a way that our healthcare system can manage to keep up with it, because we certainly, I don't know anyone who wants our hospitals to be completely overrun and in crisis mode again. I certainly don't.
And so as I know a few of you, I know you and a few of your colleagues have written to the Trump administration as we're looking ahead to what is next for COVID-19 and the pandemic, talking about preparedness for flu season and a possible resurgence of coronavirus disease later this year. I wonder, taking a sort of broader look, what should America be doing to prepare for the next pandemic? And has that shifted your priorities as a legislator?
Well, I don't think my priorities have shifted. And I do think that my priorities are consistent with what I think America should be doing. I think it's several things. Number one, we need widespread and low-cost testing. Anyone and everyone who needs a test should be able to access it. Until that happens, we are in a dangerous situation. And I don't mean just, you know, celebrities in Hollywood who can seem to get a test whenever they want. I want the person who works at McDonald's, who's keeping my daughter supplied in chicken McNuggets, because there are days when she won't eat anything else. I want those workers to be able to afford and have access to a test. I want the janitors who are cleaning our hospitals. I want the person who works at, you know, the Dominic's and the local grocery store who is checking out everyone. The people who are on the front lines of this pandemic, even though they never signed up to be on the front lines of a global pandemic, I want those folks to be able to be tested and be able to afford the testing. Because if they can't afford, if the test is even $50, people who are working for minimum wage cannot afford to pay that. And so they will come to work even though they think they might be ill. And that only makes the situation worse. So number one for me is widespread, low cost, if not free testing. The second thing is making sure that our hospitals and our frontline healthcare workers have the resources that they need. That is the funding from the federal government to keep our hospitals operating. And then also all of the PPE and supplies that they need to continue to move forward and treat their patients. And that gets to the third thing, which is something I've been pushing this administration so hard on, the Trump administration, which is the logistical network. We have to be able to provide the PPE, resupply our national stockpiles, and provide ongoing access to all the protective equipment. I've been talking to hospitals all up and down the state, you know, from the north side of the loop all the way down to far southern Illinois. And they all say the same thing. They are still having problems accessing adequate PPE beyond a 2-week or 3-week period. And we can't get in front of this pandemic if our hospitals and our frontline workers can't be protected from it. And so for me, those are my three main priorities. And of course, contact tracing that goes with the access to testing as well. Mm-hmm. I think those are critical for us to be able to reopen and deal with this pandemic well into the future. I don't see how we move forward without those three things.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to The 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. We're speaking with Illinois U.S. Senator Tammy Duckworth. Senator, last weekend, as you know, the Illinois General Assembly passed a state budget that relies on billions of dollars in federal aid that your colleagues in the U.S. House have approved, in some form at least. Will the Senate come through to pass an aid package to help the ailing state and local governments across Illinois?
Well, if Dick Durbin and I have any say in it, yes. We're going to push hard for additional aid to come out to state and local governments. In the CARES package that we passed over a month ago, there was $150 billion that was supposed to go across the country. The first $50 billion of that was supposed to go to each of the 50 states. And then the remaining $100 billion was supposed to be divided among the states and municipalities based on population. That money has not all gone out yet. So we're pushing the Trump administration very hard to get the rest of that money out while we negotiate the next CARES package, which we'll be doing in the Senate next week to make sure that we get more funding to go out to states and local governments. And this is something that's very bipartisan, because local governments are the ones that are on the front lines of this crisis. They're the ones that are seeing the revenue shortfalls. They're the ones that are having to pay extra money to buy higher cost PPE for their paramedics and their firefighters and their police forces. And this is, you know, this happens in red states and blue states. This happens across America. So I think we can find bipartisan support for getting more funding out to state and local governments. The question is, how do we put together a package that everyone can vote on? And for me, again, the priority is going to be for our healthcare facilities, especially in rural communities where these healthcare facilities are often the largest employer in a tri-county area, and also probably the only critical care providers in a tri-county area in many cases. And then, of course, making sure that we get money into the municipalities themselves, not just to get state governments, but into local municipalities as well.
Well, you mentioned if it was up to you and Senator Durbin, but of course, Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell is going to have something to say about this, and he has not been super enthusiastic, to say the least. Do you have a sense that, is he going to come around on that, do you think?
I think he's going to be forced to come around, because I think my colleagues on the Republican side of the aisles know that their states are hurting as well. And that municipalities all across this country are hurting. This is an American issue. This is not a red or a blue state issue. This is something where municipalities in Republican areas are hurting just as much as those in Democratic areas. And even Illinois, you know, where people think of Illinois as just a blue state, but we have people who are hurting all across this the state. And in fact, and many of our rural communities are hurting even more than large metropolitan areas. So I think Mitch McConnell will be forced to come to the negotiating table, not just by Democrats, but by his own Republican members as well.
And before I move off this budgetary topic, the last thing I want to ask about is, as you know, Illinois Senate President Dunn. And here we are in the era of COVID-19, where we're all interviewing from home. I don't know if you need to take a moment to...
Nope, I'm fine. I'm sorry. That's my 2-year-old.
Nope, it happens.
She just woke up from her nap. I apologize.
No, that's okay. Like I said, I've got the door shut and hope that my own kids don't come bursting in at any moment.
Yeah. So
as I was saying, Illinois Senate President Don Harmon has asked specifically for federal money to help the Illinois state pension funds. And I wonder, is that something that's possible, or is that a non-starter in your view?
You know, I am not looking at that. I think that my priorities for dollars is going to be, again, healthcare facilities and then directly into the states with flexibility on how they are able to make up lost revenue in the states. But the pension funds, are not my priority in terms of, writing into the next aid package that, specifically that will go to pension funds. I think that what we need to do is help states be able to recover from lost revenue, and then also for the additional costs that they are having to, take on as a result of the pandemic.
You have been widely reported to be on former Vice President Joe Biden's shortlist for his own vice presidential pick for this election. Can you talk about that process? Where are you on that? Is that something you are open to?
Well, that process just moves on its own. I'm not getting involved in that process. My focus is on getting Joe Biden elected. I do apologize for my 2-year-old in fact. I'm like all the other working moms out there, right? We're trying to hold it all together and do our jobs and also take care of our babies. So this is my my shout out to all of the working families out there who are doing the same thing that I'm doing. But listen,
I feel bad for keeping you from her.
No, so. It's fine. She's just putting on a hardcore press because she knows, the mommy guilt will kick in. No, listen, I am focused on getting real leadership into the White House so that we can, as a nation, emerge out of this global pandemic and rebuild our economy. Our nation is facing a crisis right now that it has not faced in terms of severity, this level of severity in quite a while. And I believe that Joe Biden is the right person with the right experience to get to address many of the issues that President Trump has failed to do. I mean, he's really miserably failed at responding to this crisis, and even moving forward in terms of, something as simple as refilling the national stockpiles on protective equipment. So I will let that process move forward. Obviously, it is an honor to have my name mentioned in the same breath as a Tammy Baldwin or any of the other wonderful women whose names have been mentioned, but I am really just focused on getting Joe Biden elected, and I'll let that other process move along on its own without my interference. I got enough on my plate, as you can hear.
Sure. And on a serious point on this, though, there has been a lot of attention to allegations by a woman named Tara Reid against the former vice president, actually when he was a U.S. senator. I wonder where are you on that? Do you believe Tara Reid's allegations against the former vice president?
Well, let me just say first that any victim of abuse should be listened to and deserves to be listened to. And I think that one of the things that Joe Biden has done clearly is he's addressed this head on, and he's he has called for his records to be released by the Senate, his personal records, and I think he has very credibly addressed these issues. And he has actually stepped out of the way of any investigations that any of the major journalists have been conducting, which I think is the right thing to do. I think this contrasts very sharply with President Trump, who is known to have tried to silence his accusers, someone who has actually gotten major tabloids to buy the stories of his accusers and and actually kill them, someone who has threatened and harassed all of the accusers and who is actually on record boasting about sexually assaulting women. So there's a big difference here. And I think that Terry Reid should be listened to. She has been listened to. I think Joe Biden has addressed the issue in a very credible manner. And I think that, as he said, you know, let the Senate release his personnel records and let's let that move forward. But let's not equate what's happening here to the very real problems that, you know, and the very real issues that President Trump has demonstrated throughout his years. And in fact, he himself has boasted about sexually assaulting women, recorded, you know, having conversations about this. There's a very big difference between these two situations. So let's not sort of equate the two.
Illinois U.S. Senator Tammy Duckworth, we thank you for your time.
Thank you so much.
Coming up after the break, going for a run is supposed to be energizing, but after the killing of Ahmaud Arbery, runners who are Black are wondering if something as innocent as simply taking a jog could end their lives in racial violence. That conversation after a short break. You're listening to The 21st. Stay with us.